And now, Move the Sticks with Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Move the Sticks. DJ Bucky back with you. Buck, how you doing, man?
And I'm good. I'm good, DJ. It's funny. Prior to turning on the recorder, we were talking about what's coming up. And, man, I look up. It's almost the deadline for all the underclassmen to declare. It's almost time to, like, flip the page with the Super Bowl being pushed back. The combine is kind of pushed back to the beginning of March. But, you know, like, it's funny because people are like, oh, football season ends. It's going to lighten. I was like, nah, not really. It actually ramps up in a different way. Like, it's almost time to kind of get ready for all the stuff that we really dive into when it comes to building a team and doing all that other stuff.
Yeah, it's fun, man. I actually enjoy it, man, as we get towards that first deadline. I think I've got a mock draft coming out in a couple weeks. I think that already cranks up. Oh. And then end of the month, I'll have my top 50 list. So we're in the middle of it. But it's fun. It's like kind of opening up new presents. You know, you get a chance to study these guys for the first time and you find some surprises under there, some that you thought you'd like, you don't, some that you didn't think you like, you do. But it's a fun time of year. We got a good one today, Buck. We're going to talk about what's going on with a premier college quarterback and how this could kind of be kind of a turning point, I think, in the college football landscape. I want to talk about one of the biggest playoff games. It's really a playoff game when you look at it. When you look at the Chargers and the Raiders playing Sunday night, it's a play-in game, winning in. I think it's the biggest game of the week. We're going to hit on that as well. But I want to get your thoughts here starting off on this Caleb Williams situation. So Caleb Williams, quarterback at Oklahoma, was he the highest rated quarterback coming into college, Buck? He's a five-star kid, been, right?
Yeah, he was. He was a big time. He was a big time recruit. It was a big deal when they got him. You know.
So he goes to Oklahoma. Lincoln Riley, as everybody knows, leaves and goes to USC. Caleb Williams plays through the bowl game. After the bowl game, he announces he's going to put his name into the portal. It said he's still open to potentially coming back to Oklahoma, but is going to explore his options. So there's a lot of different layers to this that I kind of wanted to hit because I think it's really fascinating, and I think it could be kind of the beginning of a big change. And Nabil just said on here he was the number two quarterback coming out of high school. But here's my first thought. There's a lot of different layers to it. My first thought, let's say Caleb Williams, let's take him, okay, but then let's also take anybody else that's had a big season. Let's look at C.J. Stroud. From Ohio State, who went off in the Rose Bowl, who you know going back to high school. Then let's look also at Bryce Young, another one who you know who has a chance to win a national championship at Alabama coming on the heels of the Heisman Trophy. If you are a college kid and you don't necessarily even want to transfer, but if you want to know what you are worth, where is the harm and after that Rose Bowl or after the national championship game of even those quarterbacks going to their coaches, respective coaches, and saying, guys, here's the deal. I just want to know what my market is. So I'm going to put my name in the portal. Now, I'm going to find out what my market is. And guess what? Guess what? This is where I want to be. And you'll have a right to match. You can have a right to match whatever I get. They have that power. Tell me that they don't have that power, Buck.
Holy smokes. I mean,
it's not been discussed, but I talked to somebody in the sport the other day that brought this up, and I thought, you know what? That's a fascinating thought.
You are now talking about free agency. You're talking about free agency.
But you do it legally instead of everybody back channeling you and saying, listen, you say, okay, I'm going to go in the portal. I'm going to spend 10 days in the portal, and I'm going to see what all is out there. And maybe, you know what? Maybe it's a situation where you know, this booster from this certain school says it's $1 million or $2 million. And then I go back to my school and say, look, I can go right now and get $2 million. But if we can cobble together some stuff here to get me to 1.5, I'll stay.
Wow. I mean,
people, old school people are going to hate it. Go, oh, this is not college. It is. It's here, man.
Well,
here.
Like, I mean, look, it is where we are because as much as we talk about Oklahoma just pulled in the transfer from UCF.
Yeah.
Central Florida.
Dilla Gabriel. Yeah.
Yeah. Gabriel. Gabriel comes because I think his coordinator is now.
He was with him at UCF. Yeah. Lebby was with him at UCF.
Yeah. So if I'm Caleb Williams, even before I go, I was like, whoa, wait a minute.
You already made a move. Yeah.
What's this about? Like,
yeah.
And so there's something to it. I think the danger, the only danger that you have in kind of playing that game where you on the front end of, hey, here's what I'm going to do, guys. I'm going to transfer portal for 10 days. And this and that, you open yourself up to be like, oh, you're gone? Whoop. They swap somebody else in.
You think Ohio State would have the huevos to do that and tell that kid to hit the bricks after what he just did? No way.
I don't think so. That's
no way.
That's the only thing. But I think what you bring up is the management of team and the coordination of player personnel and outside interests, meaning those around the program who can help you kind of compensate the players through NIL, you better be on the same thing, because it's almost like operating under a cap without a hard number on top of the cap.
Yeah.
Like, what do we have?
Bryce Young made $1 million before he signed $1 million with NIL deals before he played. He just won a Heisman Trophy and might win the national championship. If he's worth $1 million before that, what the heck is he worth now?
Oh, it's going to be ridiculous.
I'm serious.
The price goes up. Like, yeah. And so, but DJ, you have to have, someone has to be tied in to understand what's out there and who our alumni base is, our booster club, our boosters and all that other stuff. Like, it takes, you got to treat, it's business now. Mm-hmm. Like, it's business on that side of it. And you have to be able to manage it. You also have to be able to figure out, here's the pool of NIL bucks that we have. Mm-hmm. How do we want to disperse it? Mm-hmm. How do we value, do we value certain positions differently than that? Is it player driven where we have certain players that get it? But
by the way,
these conversations.
Let me interrupt you too, because this is what you're going to hear. You're going to hear, well, technically, by the rules, the schools are not allowed to coordinate with the boosters and the companies and the corporations for these players. Yeah, right. You don't think that's happening? It's happening everywhere. Yeah. So whether, and they're savvy enough that there's LLCs set up and all this kind of stuff, and you can't, they're not going to be able to tie any of this stuff. But at the end of the day, it's still at the direction of the schools. Now, my next thing is, I don't think an athletic director, with all that he has on his plate, is equipped to be able to manage this. I sure as heck know, because we know a lot of these guys are good buddies of ours. You know, the director of player personnel at these colleges that are trying to deal with recruiting, they're recruiting coordinators. I don't know that they're equipped in terms of budgetary you know, experience and to be able to manage all these different things. You've got to manage the portal. You've got to manage, obviously, the high school recruiting, which they've done. Now you're talking about trying to coordinate, you know, the finances of how all this stuff is getting handled. Like, to me, you're going to end up seeing with these big Power Five programs, the premier programs, they're going to have like a president of football, basically. And AD can go worry about all the other sports.
President of football
guy, kind of. That's what it is. You got to run. Look at all the different departments you have to run now at a college, at a major college program.
Okay, so what we're talking about is a Rich McKay-ish type role.
Yeah, Rich McKay, but it's just solely with football. Like, do you remember, like, when we were growing up, I don't even know, like, you might have had it at North Carolina back in the day, but when I was at App State, when I was coming up, we shared the weight room with the girls' field hockey team
everybody.
And everybody else. It was one weight room for everybody. Yeah. And now we've seen it all get siloed, right, where football has their own facility, basketball has their own facility, their weight room and practice facility, locker room, all that stuff.
And then
it wasn't like that. Yeah, it wasn't like that back in the day.
No, it absolutely wasn't like that. But, I mean, it's a new time. And look, man, you either can play the game or you can't play the game. I think the role that you talk about, the football czar, now means that, look, you have to spend more money on your football department and your staffing issues. Because before, it was a big deal when we saw the personnel directors kind of make their way to the college game, where you had the guys who, like at Carolina, Daryl Moody, who was my offensive coordinator, but was a longtime NFL scout after he left the college game for a while, is back at Carolina now, just kind of like coordinating and doing some stuff. He and Sparky Woods kind of work in the office and do some of those things when it comes to tying in those things. Well, now, DJ, though, you have to have someone who is really in it, who really knows the recruiting, the transfer portal, all that other stuff from an evaluation standpoint. But beyond that, you're saying we need somebody over top of those people to then coordinate and direct it, because my football director now needs to go to the czar, the president that we're talking about, and say, okay, here's where we are. Here's what we need. These are the things that are popping up. Okay, let me take this information and now go to the money people and figure out how we're going to play. Because there's a lot of back and forth that will need to be done. And the head coach can't be, he can't
manage. He doesn't have time. You got to prepare for a game. You don't have time to be doing that. And even to the point where, like, from a staffing standpoint, for those that don't know, so you have in the NFL, you have the college personnel side, which is going out to the colleges and getting ready for the draft and studying those players. You have the pro personnel side, which is involved of your advanced scouting for the teams you're getting ready to play, as well as free agency. Well, it doesn't happen where you go, okay, it's the first day of free agency, or the season ends, and now, okay, let's start watching the free agents. No, that stuff's all done a year ahead of time. You're already getting your board set for who is potentially going to be a free agent. If you are a major college football program right now, if you don't right now, you will soon have in the portal department and your portal area, because you have your high school guys that are getting ready and studying high school recruits, and you have your portal guys. You're not going to sit there and wait and say, okay, who's on the list today, guys? Oh, Jones from UAB's on here. Like, no, you're going to have assigned every single college to somebody in your building who is going to be keeping up with these entire rosters, so that when Jim Smith, you know, from Northwestern State hits the portal, you already have a grade, and he is a thumbs up or a thumbs down of whether or not you're going to go after him. And to be honest with you, what most of the big teams are probably going to be doing is when you have a player that lights it up as a freshman at Georgia Southern, you're probably back channeling him, messaging him through his high school coach or the go-betweens or whatever to say, hey, do what you need to do, but if you get in the portal, we have a place for you on our roster, and guess what that pays? You know, this is what that pays. Like, that's all coming, and it might be kind of ugly and messy and people don't want to hear it, but I'm telling you, that's, you better be doing that planning. You got no shot to compete in college football going forward.
DJ, it's a very real deal. And I told you, like, last time on the podcast, we talked about it briefly. We talked about what Deion Sanders told Rich Eisen on his show about his model of recruiting at Jackson State. And Jackson State is not even a Power 5 school. But Deion said, and he's quoted, 40% of it is coming from grad transfers. Another 40% are coming from the portal. And then 20% are coming from high school. Yeah. So that right there is speaking to the transient nature of college football. And so if 80% of it are coming from some kind of transfer, you better have people that are on it when it comes to looking at the college game. And DJ, you talk about and doing it like pro scouts do it, because in the pro scouting department, you would have people assigned to divisions, right? Hey, so you and I are working together. Hey, you do the AFC East. I got the AFC South. And so I know the four teams and they're intimately. Yeah. I know everything about them. I think now in college, you're going to have to treat this conferences like that. Hey, DJ, you got the Big Ten. Nabil, you have the ACC. Such and such has the SEC, however we do it. But you have to have the coverage, and you have to know everybody. And that means that not only do you have to know about them, what they're doing in college, you still have to have some familiarity with them in high school. And so I think it makes for an even expanded recruiting department. And maybe you can get away some of it with interns and volunteers and those things. But now you're going to have some professionals that know exactly what this looks like to be able to stack those boards. And the boards that we talk about, so we come from a world in the college game where you just have the college draft board.
Yeah.
Well, you know, on the pro side, they have the emergency board with all the pro guys. Mm-hmm. So now you have to, in your offices, you may have to have three different boards. The grad transfer board, the transfer portal, and the recruiting rankings. Can you imagine the work that has to be done to go there? And then just think about the grading scale. The grading scale that you have to use for those things. You now have to have a universal grading scale that allows you to fold in grad transfers, regular transfers, and then high school guys. And if they are operating like we are, where the grades have verbiage that matches how a player is going to play, Can you imagine the projection on that? Because the high school guy, you're like, hey, he might be able to be a starter by year four or five.
Not taking that guy anymore.
can we even do that anymore? Because
you're not going to take him. You'll let somebody else develop that kid. I'll take him after him. He's been developed by somebody else.
I got 80% of those guys. And so it takes us down a bunch of different things. So what we're talking about basically are the heavy hitters, right? The top of the Power Five. So now, how does that change the recruiting model for you guys that are in your group of five? Yeah. Like, how does that change? Do you like, hey.
How do you keep a kid now if you're, and I'll use my school as a great example, as App State. Like, when you get a kid who comes in, he's a freshman All-American, you know how hard it's going to be to keep him? Do you know how many Power Five or like big programs? Let's say that there's 20 elite programs. How many of those top 20 elite programs are going to be back channeling these kids at schools like App, where you have a freshman All-American season, and then they're going to back channel him through high school coaches and go-betweens with offers on the table of what they can do for the kid? It's going to be hard to keep those guys, man.
Yeah, it's going to be hard to keep him. And not only that, like, DJ, you have to start as a coach. You've had to, in 1 year, completely change the way that you think about building your program.
Yeah.
Right? We can talk about Michigan State and Mel Tucker and what they did. And so, you know, like, football is a copycat league. So there are going to be others at lower levels that say, oh, okay, I see how Mel did that with, okay, grad transfers and transfers and this and that. Okay, so we're at the lower level. And we're not going to recruit any high school guys.
No, we'll take all the kickbacks.
We're going to have open arms. Yeah. Open arms. Hey, every transfer is welcome.
Mm-hmm.
And then you not only have to take them in, but then you have to have a plan to build a team with a transient nature to it.
Yeah, it's like a junior college. You're going to turn those schools into junior colleges where you got 1 and 2 years with the kids, and then you bring in another group of 1 to 2 year kids.
And so just think about that, and think about how good you have to be at establishing a culture in which you may have a 1 or 2 year expiration date on that. Mm-hmm. And I know teams, we've talked to coaches who always say, oh, you always have to reset your culture every year. You absolutely have to do it now in today's climate. And you have to be great with communication with your players, because players can just opt and move anywhere. Man, you better be able to have very frank and honest conversations. You better to be able to not only recruit those to the program, but recruit yours to stay in the program. It's a lot going on, man. It's bananas.
It's crazy. I was talking to Klatt the other day, and I just brought up the point with him. I'm like, the sad thing is some of these kids are going to step over a dollar to pick up a nickel. You know, mm-hmm. like you're in a situation where you're playing really well. They're developing you. You're improving. You're going to help your draft status. You're going to make a ton of money in the NFL, and you're going to forgo that to go pick up kind of the immediate, you know, 50, 100, 250, 500, whatever it is. That you can put in your pocket right now. Maybe you go to a place that doesn't develop you as well. The scheme doesn't fit you as well. Now you've impacted your draft stock, your overall development, and the earnings potential that you'd be sacrificing for that short-term fix. That's the only thing that's going to be the bummer of it, because there are going to be kids that do that.
And this is why guys have to have enough self-awareness to know exactly where they fit into pecking order. Because DJ, what you're talking about is you're talking about people, young people who are going to leave sure things, right? And right now we're talking about the monetary part of it, the NIL or whatever, but we're talking about people who are going to forego education opportunities for 4 or 5 years to go roll the dice on a situation that's tied to playing and the game and that stuff. And I know we won't talk about it like on major channels or whatever, but that is a big decision. Mm-hmm. That is a big risk, because say you have I have a scholarship at North Carolina. Mm-hmm. I'm there. Like, those scholarships are 4 or 5 years.
It's a great school. Like, yeah. Great degree.
I decide to transfer, but I don't get picked up.
Mm-hmm.
I don't get picked up to the level that I think. So now I drop down a level. Maybe I find a way to play somewhere else. But not only have I jeopardized like the playing, but now my degree is different than what I thought it was going into it. And I know people say, oh, no one goes into it for a degree. But I would like to think, like, yes, we do go into it to graduate and have an education and all that other stuff.
It's going
to
help you out the rest of your life.
There's a lot of stuff to consider when you're making those things. And what I worry about is people being so short-sighted that they let a four-year run impact the next 40 years of their life because they didn't choose accordingly. They didn't make the right decision.
It's a wild, wild west, man. But I mean, I'm telling you, I just think that those are interesting discussions about, you know, maybe guys testing the waters just to get, you know, see what you're worth. Like some people, you know, it's just like with us in professional life, right? You're like, okay, I'm getting close to the end of my contract. I've got kind of an offer to renew, or do I go to the market and see what I'm worth? Now, it doesn't mean I'm going to leave my current employer, but I would, you know, I'd be curious to see like what's my value in the marketplace. And no different here with some, and I'm not talking about everybody. I'm just talking about like the, maybe the 5 to 10 players that are elite, elite, elite players that would be curious to say, I wonder what my value is, on the open market.
Yeah. I mean, it's one of those things where you have to constantly talk about it. You have to be on it when it comes to, all right, what am I thinking? What's best for me? Can I get honest feedback and not have people that are in my circle that are always looking at the game through rose-colored lenses? because somebody has to tell you the truth when you talk about the value, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, everything is about value, enhancing your value, knowing exactly where your value is. Well, how many people are going to listen to the truthers to tell them, hey, man, here's where you are. You're not a droughtful kid right now. Like, this is not going for you. You may need to think about some of these things. I think in college, they used to have the joke when coaches would say, hey, man, it might be time for you to get on with your life's work. when they don't want you to come back for that last year that you may have due to a medical thing or
the famous line, right? The world needs ditch diggers too.
Yeah, it's a different time. I never thought that it would be like this. Like, DJ, in a year, it's completely flipped.
It's changed like crazy. It's crazy. It's, and I don't know. I don't know. I like the fact that they're getting paid. I like the fact that they're getting something back for the value that they bring. I don't know if in the long run, if this is a good thing or a bad thing. I don't think any of us know. I think people are passionate about it, but it's yet to be seen. Let's look back 10 years from now. We might go, oh my gosh, this all worked out great. Everybody got what they wanted. It's fair, equitable. We might look back at 10 years ago, oh my gosh, that ruined college football. Like, I don't know. I don't think anybody knows.
Yeah, no, it may be one of those things. And maybe one of those things that could have been easily fixed before we got to this point if everyone got like a little fair sliver of the pie. But now we're here. And look, man, the consequences are, I mean, they're going to have major ramifications on how the game looks. I mean, even with the bowl games and stuff like that. I mean, we have a million bowl games, but there's not a lot of excitement over some of the guys that play. Some of them don't. And what that looks like. And I think what you're going to end up getting, I think you have a split. I think college football is going to split where you have the guys who want to play the game, as we were talking about with the NILs and the cap and money and all that making changes. And then I think you have a lesser group of schools that kind of take the model at the lower levels where they kind of have
amateurism. It goes back to kind of amateurism.
And they have all that other stuff and they kind of play it that way, because I don't know if it can continue to go the way that it is currently constructed and make it happen. I don't know if that's a long-term sustainable.
Not for everybody. Not everybody can play that game. I know that. Not everybody can play that game. All right, we're going to preview one of the biggest games, actually the biggest game of the weekend right after this. All right, Buck. Sunday night, I'll be out there. Chargers, Raiders. It's a win and in. You know that rivalry up close. I mean, what do you expect from the atmosphere of this game, and then what do you expect from the game itself here?
I'll tell you, going in terms of the atmosphere and stuff, I would expect it to be kind of raucous. I would expect the Raider Nation to be out in full effect. But I'm going to say this, and I don't make light of this when I say it. This is the biggest game of Derek Carr's career. This is the biggest game of his career, in my estimation. Derek Carr has just two winning seasons in his career. Derek Carr has one playoff berth secured in his career, but he didn't play in that playoff game. Derek Carr has 1 year remaining on his deal. If Derek Carr wants to be considered an elite player, elite players have to go to the playoffs. If Derek Carr wants to make it into the $40 million club, he has to have enough pelts on the wall to justify being included in the conversation with Pat Mahomes, Josh Allen, Dak Prescott, and Deshaun Watson. So for me, the only way that you can do that, you have to win a must-see game, a marquee game against a superstar on the other side in Justin Herbert. This is a game where he will be measured not only in team performance, but the eyeball test. How does Derek Carr look in comparison to Justin Herbert? Because we can talk about Justin Herbert. And I'm going to tell you, man, the coach, Brandon Staley's an all-star. I heard him last night on Sirius NFL Radio talking to Bill Polian and stuff. And he gets it, unlike some guys get it. Like, look, you can take him to task for, like, his aggressiveness and maybe the way that he utilizes analytics. But in terms of being able to articulate the things about a quarterback, outstanding. Outstanding. I was, like, blown away by just listening to him. So, yeah, so for Derek Carr, you're going to shoot out at the OK Corral against Justin Herbert. And you better find a way to win it. If not, all of that stuff that we talked about, all the good favor, all that stuff that he's done, the goodwill that he's curried this year in terms of guiding the team, it all goes out the window because you don't have anything to show for it.
Yeah, and it looks like they're going to get Darren Waller back. When I'm watching the video getting ready for this one, Buck, I'll tell you what, I know the numbers have been great for him. I got the numbers here. Let me pull them up real quick. But I still feel like maybe this dude gets kind of lost in the shuffle when you're talking about really, really great young players. So Hunter Renfro's got 99 catches for 1,025 yards and 7 touchdowns. And I feel like he's kind of done it quietly in that, you know, obviously, you know, you look at the season that Cooper Kupp's had and Ja'Marr Chase, that's kind of taken up all the oxygen at the receiver position. A.J. Brown comes back. When you watch this dude week in and week out, I don't know if there's a better route runner right now in the league in terms of creating separation. Like he's getting freaking 4 yards of separation underneath. Like it's ridiculous how good he is underneath.
And I feel like it's just been the last six or so games where he just kind of has come on like gangbusters. He's found a way to get open. He has all the tricks in the book. And I found this out about Hunter Renfro. Evidently, he and Fred Biletnikoff have a conversation or two each week. For anyone who doesn't know, Freddie B was a longtime NFL receiver for the Raiders. But then he was really a great wide receiver coach. He was a wide receiver coach with the Raiders when I was there. I was on defense then, but Freddie B is a great developer. And evidently, man, he has been getting some sauce and some nuances from Freddie that has certainly helped him take his game up a notch. Because let's be honest, DJ, Hunter Renfro was a great story at Clemson. I don't know if any of us expected him to be impactful.
It's a fifth-round pick.
Yeah, an impactful player for the Raiders. Where he, I mean, look, he's filling the role right now of a number one, even though he doesn't, I would say, have the traditional qualities of a number one.
100 catches and 1,000 yards, man. Like, that's legit.
He's wearing people out. And so, yeah, it's a great story. And I think for the Chargers, man, I think you got to cut off the faucet right away. Darren Wallace coming back from an injury. You need to be mindful of him. But I think in these games, hey, man, you got to cut off the faucet.
Try and take him away.
Hey, Derek Carr, you're going to have to find somebody else. Somebody else, Zay Jones, Brian Evans, Deshaun Jackson, somebody else is going to have to beat us in those key moments. It can't be Hunter Renfro.
Yeah. No, it's there's so many intriguing matchups in this game. Like I look from the Chargers standpoint, I mean, Joey Bosa, you know, I'd say graduated Alex Leatherwood from tackle to guard the last time they played. Oh, yeah. And now he's going to get a chance to go up against Brandon Parker. He was in the 2018 class, was a third round pick, but that's a matchup that should favor the Chargers. You mentioned, or we were talking about Waller and Derwin James is as good as it gets. Like that's great on great. That's going to be a fun one to watch. You kind of call that a draw. You know, I kind of go back and forth and find this matchup or that matchup, you know, the right tackle position with Storm Norton, he's going to have to deal with Max Crosby and Ngakoue. You think, okay, that's advantage Raiders. You know, and Slater versus those guys is going to be a great matchup. Slater did a good job against them the first time around. Austin Eckler working against these linebackers, that should be an advantage for the Chargers there. But I mean, I feel like you can kind of go back and forth, and then where we end up exactly where you started. Derek Carr and Justin Herbert. It's going to decide this football game.
It's going to decide. And it's funny, in listening to Staley talk about the game, he said, "Look, Gus Bradley's going to put a lid on top of the coverage." And the difference in the first game was Derek Carr wore them out with the checkdowns and the underneath stuff, and they just connected the dots and moved the ball down the field. Same thing is going to happen because Brandon Staley also puts a top. He puts a lid over the coverage. You're not going to get the deep balls, and the Raiders typically don't operate like that. So then it's going to be how many completions can you string together? And can you string them together enough that now when you get in the red zone, when it becomes a tighter field, this is where I think arm talent and stuff comes in. When the windows are tighter and you got to fit it in on those got to have it moments, can Derek Carr make those throws? Like, and it's weird that I'm saying a second year pro versus a veteran, but I'm saying I may not have those same issues about the second year pro. With Derek Carr, I need to see it because DJ, this goes all the way back to when I saw him in with Las Vegas Bowl, Fresno State versus, I think it was USC they played in that game.
Yeah, I was there. USC. Yeah,
having to make plays. Hey, now you got to make plays. And we talk about it being a quarterback-driven league. Great quarterbacks separate themselves in these kind of games. And so for me, I'll be sitting on the couch with my popcorn, ready to go, see what happens.
You know what? I almost forgot about this. Go back and revisit it. Chargers beat them 28-14. All right. The Raiders offense really didn't do anything. They had 51 yards and one first down in their first seven possessions in the first half. 51 yards at halftime. So they came back, made a little bit of a game. Chargers win 28-14. This is Joey Bosa after the game talking about the Raiders offense. We knew once we hit him a few times, he really gets shook. And you saw on Christian Covington's sack, he was pretty much curling into a ball before we even got back there. Great dude, great player, but we know once you get pressure on him, he kind of shuts down.
Ooh. Say the quiet part out loud. Say the quiet part out loud. Hey, but DJ, that's how it is.
Yeah.
Like,
but I mean, that's what, again, I use that to say, like, this is, again, like, this is all building up to this is go time for Derek Carr. Like, this is it. This is it or it's not it. Like, this is the moment. He's got to meet the moment.
I think one of the best things that's ever come out of the podcast is the analogy that we talk about with quarterbacks, trucks and trailers, and the deciding factor in terms of who's who and what's what. And when you look at the playoff field, you ain't going to be a whole lot of trailers in the playoff field.
No.
Like, we can talk about, oh, you got a good quarterback. Oh, this guy's a quarterback. At the end of the day, either you have a dude or you're looking for a dude. Mm-hmm. That's it. And the dude quality that we talk about is, hey, man, you think Joey Bosa would ever say that about an Aaron Rodgers type? You ever hear him say that about a Pat Mahomes type, someone in there? Like, you cannot show the opponent that you have cracks, that you have cracks in the foundation. To me, that's telling. And so for Derek Carr to rewrite that narrative, he's going to have to deliver. Mm-hmm. And knowing you can't excuse your way out of it, you can't talk your way out of it. At the end of the day, you can be judged on how you play, and he has to play. And I know there's this debate about quarterback wins and that stuff. It doesn't matter. You have to just know. Mm-hmm. Great quarterbacks win games, mm-hmm. period. Mm-hmm. You cannot be a great quarterback if you don't win. You can't.
No doubt. No doubt. I'm going to go through a little blink scouting exercise here real quick, because I want you to just first thing that comes to your mind. Okay. Let's play trucks or trailers. You ready to go for the playoff teams? Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Let's start in the AFC. The number one seed's the Tennessee Titans, Ryan Tannehill.
He's a trailer, man.
Trailer. Patrick Mahomes.
Truck.
Joe Burrow. Truck. Josh Allen.
Truck.
Truck. Patriots, Mac Jones. Trailer.
Trailer.
Colts, Carson Wentz.
Trailer.
Trailer. Then the last spot with the Chargers and the Raiders. Justin Herbert.
It's a truck. And Derek Carr.
Derek Carr, trailer.
It's a trailer. Yeah. I mean, that's what it is. Look.
High-end trailer.
High-end trailer. It's nice. It's fancy. Got all the things, but it's still a trailer. It's still behind the truck. It's different. And we can dress this up, and we can talk about it and all that. And people can talk themselves into, like, hey, you know, I think Cousins, I think this. At the end of the day, you know.
Yeah.
When you're watching
the game. That's what I'm saying. These are just quick. These are quick.
When you're watching reactions. The game, you know. Yeah. And it's the deciding factor. And you can win with a trailer.
Yeah.
But everything else has to be right. Yeah. And the margin for error is so much smaller when you have a trailer as opposed to a truck.
All right. You want to go to NFC real quick?
Yeah.
All right. Aaron Rodgers.
Look, he's a truck.
Truck.
Tom Brady's a truck.
Okay, here's the interesting one. The Rams, Stafford, truck or trailer? I think he's a truck. I think sometimes that truck can run the truck off the road, but whether they win or they
lose, he's an El Camino.
He's in charge.
El Camino. You ever seen the El Camino? Like, way back in the 70s?
It's a half car, half truck. Half car, half truck. What was the name of that show? My dad used to love that show with James Garner. What was the Rockford Files? I think Rockford Files, he drove one of those things.
He's an El Camino. He's a hybrid. Because there are times, even in the last game against the Rams, he's turning it over and you're like, oh, it's a trade. The team has to pull him. But then the last half, he's a truck. He's a blend.
Yeah. But I feel like he's a truck because
he's a truck.
Whether they win or lose, I feel like he's driving it. Like he's pulling them to the victory.
Yeah. Like I think it's fair to say he's a truck. He's a truck.
He's a truck, but he needs a new navigation system, because sometimes he doesn't take us in the right direction, but he's taking us. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. Tampa, Tom Brady, truck.
Yeah.
Dak Prescott.
Man, the Cowboys, he's a truck, but man, sometimes he has these moments. I'm like, I think he's a truck.
He's the same thing. He's a truck with a little GPS tweak.
Yeah, he goes back. Yeah, we need to
work. Then we go to Arizona, Kyler Murray, truck.
Truck.
Philadelphia, Jalen Hurts is a trailer at this point in time.
He is a trailer. And it's weird, though, because they hitched the truck to the trailer in terms of how they play, but he's not quite that up. Like, I think the fairest comparison I can say is that Jalen Hurts reminds me a lot of Dak Prescott in that vein. And maybe he'll advance and gets better. I think his best qualities are the sauce that he brings.
I get the leadership and the presence and the toughness.
And I feel like, and I feel like that was Dak Prescott's best qualities early in his career. And I think he improved. We'll see if Jalen improves, but man, it's different. And
so Saints get a trailer.
Trailer. Yeah. Okay, so then we got the Niners. If the Niners.
The Niners. Yeah, I miss the Niners.
And Jimmy G.
I think he's a trailer.
Oh, yeah.
He's a trailer. But I mean, if you're looking at it, the majority, it's, you know,
trucks.
75, 80% trucks once you get into the postseason.
I think the bigger thing would be, DJ, how many trucks are outside the tournament field?
Ooh. You want to do that real quick? Well, I'll go outside.
Are there any trucks outside the field?
Yeah, because I would say Lamar, when healthy, is a truck. I would say no with Pittsburgh, no with Miami, no with Cleveland, no with Denver, no with Jets. I mean, Deshaun Watson's not playing, so that doesn't count.
Yeah.
So really only one in the AFC that's not – there's only one truck not in the playoffs in the AFC. That's Lamar.
Yeah. Yeah,
and he's been hurt, and he's missed time, and the whole team's been decimated. You think if they're a remote, if he's healthy or the team's healthy, they're a playoff team,
right? So then when we go to the NFC,
Russell Wilson is a truck. Matt Ryan,
not anymore.
Kirk Cousins,
that's right. So look,
no.
So
Washington, no. Chicago, no. Carolina, no. Giants, no. Lions, no. So there's only two trucks that didn't make the playoffs.
The bigger point is if you don't have a truck, you cannot go far. And when we're doing this evaluation that we're about to do, when we talk about these college quarterbacks and all that, it has to come down to those terms. We can talk about like, hey, truck, trailer, all that. Can they do it? But DJ, that's what it is. You are not going to consistently vie for the title with a trailer. No. You have to have a truck. It's a shorter window.
Yeah. No, it's a good. That was a good exercise, man. That was fun. All right, anything you want to add here, Buck? Actually, I think we need to get to another ad here. So enjoy this. All right, Buck. I almost forgot that last ad. Had to make sure we snuck that one in there. We don't want to get in trouble with the bosses here. Anything else you want to add before we we jump out of here?
Nah, that's it. We're good.
Yeah. No, that was fun. All right, appreciate you guys hanging with us. We will be back with a playoff game, I believe, with Amazon. We're going to do scouts feed for a wild card game. Don't know which game it is.
Don't know which one.
We'll find out. We'll let you know on Monday. We'll get a chance to recap what happened in this final week of the regular season. I know we don't call it what we used to call it, but change Monday, is that what we call it? Like looking ahead Monday? What's a flowery way to say people lose their jobs? There's no nice way to do it, but there'll be some moves made on Monday. We'll have a chance to react and discuss those as well. All right, that's going to do it for us. He's Bucky Brooks. I'm Daniel Jeremiah. Thanks to Nabil. He's the best in the business. We'll catch you next time right here on Move the Sticks.